Scouts found him outside the palace wall. He was trying to light a palm tree on fire. Amusing, isn't it? You thought I held him captive when I didn't, and this is a surprise to you now. I grind my teeth down on a response. Open the gate, and you can have him. Hostin climbs the ladder to the top of the wall and glowers at Udug. General Naik is in no position to negotiate. Manas sneers at the warlord's mention of my rank. I would relish his fuming if not for Brock bound and unconscious at his feet. You want bloodshed? Udug pushes his eerie blue fire into his hands. You will lose this battle, he signals his men. Archers, ready! Hostin instructs his rebels. Galers, ready the sky! Tremblers, hold the ground! Brock is so close, yet I cannot get to him. How do I get to him? The archers light their arrows aflame and aim toward the churning storm clouds. Get low, I shout to my troops. Manas calls, fire! Arrows whirl at us. I loop my arm over Asha and pull her down with me. Galers summon a gust that throws some of the fiery arrows back. The loose ones strike stone and bounce away. Natesha and Yatin crouch near us. An arrow barely misses Yatin's leg. Two sister warriors are struck. The whizzing arrows stop, and I peer over the rampart. Brock has not moved. Soldiers heft ramps and prop them along the wall. Galer winds sweep the ramps into clouds, but more soldiers bring additional ramps, pressing with them into the storm. Udug heaves his blue fire at the barricaded gate. Hostin and several tremblers fortify the clay bricks from their side, but on the outside, the blue fire melts a hole. I need to go now, while the voider is distracted. Natesha, I say, and her attention snaps to me. You're in charge. Remember, do not engage Udug, only the soldiers. I leap over the wall onto a ramp. My knees jar and I roll down the incline to the ground. I push up and a talwar blade jabs at my middle. I reel away and draw my khanda on Manas. You're the general of who? He demands. Those women? Sister warriors, I correct, parrying his thrust. Lightning touches down behind us, and the air crackles. Men scream. A catapult burns from the lightning strike. You're serving the wrong master. Walk away, Manas. So you can save your dirty boot, a brother? He elbows me in the side, and I spin away. Our blades stretch between us. As soon as the Raja wins back his palace, I will keep your brother prisoner and let his blood every day. I will cut him over and over again. Manas swings his talwar, and our weapons clang. He will beg for me to finish him. You're done hurting Bhutas. I slam down, striking his bent knee, and then rotate and bury my khanda in his chest. May Anu have mercy on your soul. Manas jerks once and keels over. I wrench my sword from his chest. Whap, 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 whap. Behind me, soldiers brace ramps against the wall and scale them. A quake rattles them, and the ramps fall, slamming into the ground. Hail the size of my fist pummels down and bashes the forefront of the troops. Men dive under wagons or catapults for shelter. The beating hail dents the catapult buckets and mangles the springs, rendering them unusable. I run for Brock and cut away the snake root binding his wrists. His eyes snap open the second the poison is gone, and he moans. The last of the archers release more whirring, burning arrows. Sudden rains and winds redirect most of them back over the wall at us. Brock throws up a heat wave, singeing them. Ash drifts down and washes to silt in the downpour. My brother clutches his chest.
Gods, burning something felt good.
I clap his shoulder and hoist him up. A palm tree on fire?
It was a good idea. Would have worked too if those scouts hadn't caught me.
Behind us, a quake opens a crater in the ground. Several rows of archers drop into the sinkhole. Past them, the road beneath the light cavalry warps and heaves. The spooked horses scatter and buck, throwing their riders. Many are trampled in the animal's retreat. Brock scoops up a dropped shield.
Time to get out of the way.
We dash to the shelter of the wall. Sister warriors battle above us on the ramparts, but the wind and hail obscure my sight. Uduk has burned a tunnel through the reinforced brick and hurls his unnatural fire at the last defense, the gate. The bars warp and melt. He opens his arms wide in triumph and passes through the huge smoking hole. He need only step foot in the palace, and he will be free from Ashwin and his heart's wish. Aquifers wait for him on the other side. They draw streams of water from the prepositioned barrels and shoot. When the water suspends itself over the voider's head, the streams harden to jagged icicles and rain down. The daggered ice impales Udug's back and the ground around him. He yanks an icicle from his arm and throws it aside. His cold fire burns the last of them away. His puncture wounds steep tar-like blood. But one after another, they seal up and heal.
"Your powers cannot harm me," Udug says. "The Buddha soul fire I consumed protects me against your defenses."
God's mercy. Another cloudburst unleashes directly over us. Brock and I slip through the palace gate to flee the onslaught of ricocheting hail. The rebels are wreaking havoc inside the gate. Aquifers shoot streams of water from the barrels at soldiers, drowning them by flooding their mouth and nose. Men are flung over the wall, blown into the night by gaolers. I spot Opal among them, winnowing a soldier who gets too close. Tremblers use bricks and rocks to smash their opponent's skull. Despite the gruesome casualties, Imperial soldiers continue to pour into the palace grounds. The last of the light cavalry charges in, and a rider snaps a whip at Brock. The corded weapon, weighted by a trio of balls at the end, swings around his legs and trips him. Though his arms and hands are free, Brock lies limp on his side. I slice through the cord, disconnecting him from the rider. While the soldier reaches for his kanda, I arch my blade overhead and cut him down. I go to Brock and disentangle him. Up close, I see the whip is not made of leather, but interconnected cords of a poisonous vine, snake root. The soldiers fashioned a weapon that can neutralize Buddha powers. All the riders have them.
"Son of a scorpion," Brock says, shaking out of the last of the weighted cord.
I help him stand. "Stay clear of those."
"You don't have to tell me."
Brock pushes fire into his fingers. His abilities returned, he throws a curry-colored heat wave at another rider. The sister warriors hold the line atop the wall, but I do not pick out Yatin or Natesha in the fray. Bodies are strung about, as many Imperial soldiers as Rani's. None I recognize, but the loss of life sickens me. The ground trembles beneath us. Brock and I hunker down to withstand the tidal wave of quakes. Across the courtyard, a crevice opens in the ground between Hastin and Udug. A handful of unlucky soldiers fall in, their screams dying off. The warlord pulls the palace away from the demon, and a divide grows between them. We are stranded on the side the warlord pushed away, the chasm between us. Udug treads up to the gulch.
"You Buddhas think you're such masters of nature."
He manifests two burning balls and throws one to his left, one to his right. They blast through the rebel lines, clearing a path. His soldiers march through the gate with ramps. Gaolers turn squalls on them, propelling them back. Some of the gusts pluck the ramps and whirl the men off into the sky. But there are too many soldiers and ramps to stop them all. One unit reaches the gap, drops its ramp, and fashions a bridge to the other side. Udug rushes across the ravine, and then a quake shakes the temporary bridge loose, and it falls out of sight.
"We have to get across," Brock says.
The gaolers tossing soldiers around gives me an idea. I grab a ramp and drag it to Opal. "Use your winds to throw me to the other side."
"Devon, that's dangerous."
"Udug is already there. Do it."
Brock throws a heat wave at a soldier behind me, and the man runs away screaming and covered in flames.
Send me too, Brock says.
Opal sees Udug on the palace side and gives in to our lunacy.
All right, turn around and hold your breath.
Brock and I overlook the chasm and lift the ramp in front of us.
I hope you know what you're doing, he says. I do, I think.
On three,
Opal says. Brock and I hold our breath.
One, two.
Gusts barrel at us. The ramp we are holding serves as a sail, lifting us over the chasm. I make the mistake of looking down into the ravine, but we soar over the expanse and drop the ramp, so we land and roll. Brock rises beside me. He held onto his shield, and I kept my sword. The rebels hold their ground in front of the palace, fighting the imperial troops that had attacked before the chasm opened. Soldiers howl as rebels winnow, leech, and grind their opponents. We join the fight. Brock with his fire, and I with my sword. Hostin and Anjali defend the entrance. Udug cuts at them with his powers. His flames burn Anjali's arm, and she falls back. Hostin roots himself in front of his daughter and throws bricks and pavers at the demon, who burns the debris to cinders. Udug gains on Hostin until they are toe to toe. Hostin grabs Udug's throat to grind his bones. Their skin-to-skin connection backfires. Udug pushes his powers into him, and the warlord ruptures into blue light. Anjali cries out in rage but is too injured to confront the voider. The palace entry lies ahead, wide open. I knock out a soldier and shout at Brock. He whirls around, sees Udug nearing the palace, and lobs a heat wave at his back. Udug bunches his shoulders to absorb the hit, pivots, and returns fire. Brock ducks behind his shield, but the blast flings him over the gully. Opal cushions his fall with a well-timed gust. His shield protected him, but he is on the wrong side of the trench again. Less than 50 strides, and Udug will be inside the palace. I dash into his path, blocking the entry. My knees lock as I raise my Khanda. I should run, hide, cower. I should apologize for my foolishness and beg for all our lives. But I have never been more certain that this is my path. Udug strides up to me, hands blazing.
You're no champion, General. You're forgettable. A side dish. An afterthought.
Blue flames flicker in his pupils.
You're ash in the wind.
His fire wallops me. I fly back into the palace, slide across the marble floor, and thump into the bottom step of the staircase. Pain slices across my skin and burns through my veins. Prince Ashwin kneels at my side. Behind him, radiating astral light, Kali enters the main hall. And then, everything shudders to black.
29. Kalinda. Devon's head slumps to the side. Smoke rises off his chest, the foul scent of scorched flesh stomach-curdling. Udug's fire burned through his tunic, down to his skin. His flesh is charred and seared. The need to go to him claws at me, but Udug nears the threshold. Anu, don't let Devon die, I pray, and cross to the palace door, leaving Ashwin to care for Devon. Don't come any farther, I shout to Udug. Dearest Kalinda, he purrs. How are you enjoying the cold fire I gifted you? I don't care for your poison, take it back! His taunting laugh knocks against my tender spots. I heard about the Samir Temple. I admire your nerve. Few mortals would dare burn down one of the gods' sanctuaries. You must admit now that you belong to the dark. No, Udug. I belong right here. Behind him, across a gully in the palace grounds, Yatin clobbers a soldier. Sister warriors combat more imperial troops, the onslaught contained on the far side of the ravine. Our side is strewn with the dead. Udug paces sideways, his arrogant smile needling into my skin. He means to unnerve me with his resemblance to Tarak, but my heart is free. You could have only survived this long by feasting upon another soul fire, he says. Was it delicious? Did you savor their warmth? I'm not like you. I ready my powers, my hands glowing greener by the second. He glares at the blood dripping from my wrists. You cannot carve out your true self. The demon part of you is too strong. Udug strikes me with a torrent of cold fire. I defend myself with my burning blue hands. His powers propel me back, my feet skidding across the ground. The flames disperse, and I stop. Udug is directly before me. He grabs my chin, fingers biting like icicles, and breathes his powers into my mouth and nose. The freezing poison slithers inside me, reawakening the toxins my bloodletting banked. Nothing strengthens a demon more than Buddha's soul fire, Udug croons. Stepping into the palace is merely a formality. I have stored up enough powers to outlast every army in the world. Nothing in your realm can hurt me. The Evernight is coming, Kalinda. You cannot stop us, but you can join us. Udug lets go. I land sprawled at his feet. His powers return twofold, insatiable in their greed. The flames frost my heart, digging icy shards into my muscles and weakening my bones to brittle. I spasm and writhe, bathing in a bitter sea. He steps over me. Once he enters the palace, the heart's wish of the prince will be satisfied and the blue flames inside me will prevail. My soul fire will collapse, a broken star, and wherever Udug goes, I will go with him. Perhaps I belong with him. His poison could not survive in me were I not part monster. Perhaps I should let him have me so he will leave this place. I grip my teeth against the agony. Bring me with you. Just stop the pain. Udug watches me thrash around.
You wish to serve the god of the Evernight?
Yes, I pant. Please take your powers from me and I'll go with you. He strides back slowly, prolonging my suffering, and bends over me.
I will collect my powers from you, but first you must swear fealty to the Evernight. Do you vow to obey Kor in all things?
I gaze across the room at Devon. Going with Udug would mean never seeing him again. Devon is too good for the void. After this life, Anu will send him to the beyond. I understand why we call it that now. The beyond is outside mankind's reach, and beyond the reach of the void. Darkness cannot dwell in the light. I can ultimately only belong to one or the other. And I know which god I serve.
No. I reach for the vile cold fire inside me, push it into my hands, and shoot it at him. My sapphire flames strike Udug's upper torso. He stumbles back, his shoulder scorched.
Nothing in our realm can hurt him. I hurl more sapphire fire at him. He slings his own at me, but I roll out of its path. Mine slams him squarely in the middle. He flies backward through the palace door and lands in the entry, grasping at his charred chest. The blue light in his hands dims. I stand over him, my fingers glowing sapphire.
Darkness, return to me, he commands.
His powers within me abruptly still and disintegrate, as though dismantling my skeleton bone by bone. I stagger to my knees, my head washed with dizziness. Udug's cold poison pours out my nose and mouth and evaporates like fog. The plumes retreat until every last cold flame has left me. I hunch over, trembling and faint, as though I have fallen from the sky. Udug lifts his hand to blast his muted powers at me, but he wavers and slackens. Tarek's empty gaze stares into nothing. Sulfur-scented smoke curls from his parted lips. Udug recalled his powers from me to save himself, but he was already too injured to survive.
Warmth floods me, relighting my soul fire and restocking my Buddha powers. I need not close my eyes and search for my inner star. I have lived so long in the dark, I recognize the light. Across the entry, Ashwin kneels beside Devon. I start to drag myself over to them, but halfway there, Ashwin points behind me and whispers my name. Blue light emanates from Tarek's corpse. The saturation of the azure brightness increases until it stings my eyes. I shield my sight, and when I look again, Tarek's body crumbles apart. A scabby, pale demon with grotesque veins, bat-like fangs, and buggy eyes wriggles out of the carcass. The demon's skin is so translucent I can see its thumping heart. Its spiny, transparent wings unfurl, slimy with mucus and riddled with veins of tar. Udug's true form grows larger until he stands taller than any man I know. Burns from our battle damaged one of his wings. He arches his head and discharges a high-pitched screech. A chill breaks out over me. His otherworldly cry reaches the battlefield, and both sides pause. Udug bares his yellow-stained fangs and flaps his spiky wings. He rises in the rotunda, his wounded wing causing him to fly off-kilter. Finally, he swoops down and shoots out the door. The soldiers and sister warriors scream and dive from his path. The demon flies higher, soaring over the wall and city. Jenny comes in from the corridor. Ashwin convinced her to take shelter after we arrived.
"The demon can fly?" she says.
Devon groans.
"Kali?"
I crawl to him and touch his chest. His burns have healed. His clothes are scorched, yet his skin is smooth and unblemished.
"How?"
I breathe.
"I don't know."
Devon opens an arm to me. I lie down beside him and stroke his bearded chin. Ashwin looks away from us.
"Don't question a mercy from the gods."
Brock strides in, burn patches covering his trousers.
"I lost sight of Udug over the desert."
"I thought he was dead," Jenny says.
"He cannot be killed," Ashwin replies bleakly. "Only vanquished."
Out the open entryway, the bloodshed has ceased. When Udug flew away, the false Raja was unmasked. I hear Natesha calling for the Imperial Army to lay down their weapons and the rebels to rein in their powers. But peace arrives too late. Bodies litter the courtyard. Losses were sustained only on our side. Mankind's. "What now?" I ask, laying my cheek against Devon's shoulder.
"Udug is injured. You saw him. He could barely fly out of here. Tomorrow we'll figure out how best to pursue him. For right now, we get off this hard floor."
In a minute, I nuzzle into the crook of his neck, and for the first time in a long while, I am warm. My open balcony door teems with morning light. I stretch my toes to the end of my canopy bed, reaching for sunshine. Noises of working men rise from the garden. Last night, Jenny closed the gulch in the palace grounds, and Brock led the surrendered rebels to the dungeons. Most had exhausted their powers during battle, preventing them from fighting or fleeing. Including Anjali, just over half survived. Ashwin sent Devon and me to rest, and then took charge, sorting through the dead and overseeing aid for the wounded. Though I wanted to visit with the Ranis and courtesans, I was glad to leave the battle site. Until yesterday, none of my palace friends were aware that I am a burner. We have much work to do to re-educate our people about Buddhas. Devon rubs his foot up my insole, tickling me. I prod him with my toe to stop. "We should get up," I say, a suggestion born of guilt more than desire. Devon hooks me with his arm and drags me against him.
"Not yet," he mutters sleepily.
After peeling ourselves off the marble floor, we stumbled to my old bedchamber and passed out from exhaustion. I hardly remember pushing the ridiculously huge pile of satin pillows from the bed and falling asleep beside Devon. In thinking over last night, I remember the initial death toll.
21 Ranis, and 49 courtesans. We have yet to tally the soldiers, though the total missing and deceased is anticipated to be in the thousands. Devon also informed me of Rowan's demise. In turn, I told him of the destruction of the Samia Temple. My sorrow returns for all those who gave their lives, but some aspects of yesterday remain murky. How did you convince Hostin to unite with the Sister Warriors? Devon traces swirls across my arm.
I realized you were right, and told him we needed to work together. I even gave a speech to the Ranis and courtesans about your devotion to them.
I splay my fingers across his chest, cherishing the low flicker of his soul fire. You did?
I was very complimentary.
Care to share what you said? He chuckles, a deep, rich sound.
Where's your humility?
I have none when it comes to your praise. I tuck my head beneath his chin and swing my leg over his, my knee high on his thigh. His sandalwood musk permeates my clothes and bed covers.
I told them, you'll do what's right for the Empire,
he says, his voice husky. I slide my fingers under his tunic neckline to erase more distance between us. Ashwin will do what's right for them. Our people need to look to him for guidance. Devon stops drawing on my arm.
Are you and he still close?
No. At least, not that way. What you saw between us wasn't real. Ashwin included me in his heart's wish. In his ideal empire, he imagined me at his side. His vision protected me from harm, but also drew me to him. Devon's voice pitches to a dissatisfied grumble.
He manipulated you to get close to him.
I'm not explaining this well. Neither of us knew his heart's wish had that much power. I figured it out in Samia, and Ashwin had no idea. I would have told you if I knew. I make myself ask the question I have been dreading since our argument in Lestari. Did you, or do you, really believe I'd choose Ashwin over you?
I prefer not to think that your choice is between him and me, but me and your throne.
I wrinkle my nose. I never wished for my throne.
But you need it to accomplish the change you wish to see in the Empire.
His answer is too smooth to convince me of his dispassion. Devon pretends not to care when he cares the most. I rest my chin on his chest and gaze up at him. I'm sorry I hurt you. I didn't think you'd leave angry.
I didn't think you wouldn't say goodbye.
I tried. His composure cracks a little.
You did?
You were already in the air. Then Mathura came to see me. I did not intend to discuss his mother. I rest my cheek on his chest again, but Devon is curious.
Kali, what did my mother say?
I decide against telling him that Mathura disapproves of our closeness, and instead, I summarize her opinion of me. She thinks I'm foolish for not wanting to be a Rani for the rest of my life.
My mother had a different experience in the palace than you. She wasn't valued as you and the other Ranis were. To her, becoming a Rani was the best life any courtesan could dream of. But she believes in you, Kali. And she's right, you're the Rani the people need.
Devon brings the back of my hand to his lips, kissing the symbol of the kindred.
But you aren't foolish for wishing for more. You have a right to your own dreams. That's why I left without saying goodbye. I was angry, but I also wanted you to make up your own mind.
His heartbeat pounds against our chests.
Truthfully, I thought you'd choose Ashwin, your throne.
I care for Ashwin like family, but I fell in love with you before I was a Rani. I lay my hand upon his flat stomach. The day will come when Ashwin will take his own wives, and I'll step down as the Empire's kindred. Devon smooths my hair from my shoulder.
And then?
And then? I want a future with you. A future of our own making.
He slides down the bed until we are eye level and strokes my hip. My nerves stir and tingle, hypersensitive to every glancing touch. His beard grazes my chin, his lips a head tilt away.
We have the same dream.
He throws the sun-scented blanket over our heads. I stretch out against him and he kisses me until my limbs quiver and my skin burns for more. Silky sheets, wet lips, and needy hands overrun my senses. We explore each other in ways we were never allowed to and never dared. No fears temper our desires. We set our dreams free, soaring to limitless heights of fulfilled wishes. Devon tries to shift away, but I pull him closer. Don't go yet, I whisper. He kisses me long and slow, melting me into my pillow, and then sits up and tugs on his trousers and white tunic. The baggy sleeves hang off his arms, and the low neckline reveals the hard cuts of his chest. He looks back at me.
It's difficult to leave you.
I grab the hair at the back of his head and drag his lips over mine. When I let go, hunger shines from his eyes, and I know I can coax him to slide back under the covers with me. My door to the corridor swings open. Giggles move across the room, and then Shyla, Ishana, and Parisa pile on the mattress with us. Asha strolls in behind them carrying a meal tray, a bandage wound around one hand. The Ramis are covered in various scrapes and bruises. Parisa's broken ribs are the worst injury. Bandages wrap around her torso beneath her sari. I do not miss what a mercy it is that we all survived.
Morning, ladies,
Devon says, too brightly for my taste. Parisa assesses the flattering fit of Devon's loose tunic.
Don't you mean good afternoon? The kindred has kept you preoccupied. Other way around, actually.
Devon galls me by adding a wink. Ishana fans herself at his suggestive tone. The prince is looking for you, and we need to ask Kalinda a few questions. Her pointed stare is a push for Devon to leave.
General Naik forgot to tell us how handsome the prince is, Parisa adds. Or how kind, says Shyla.
Her baby girl, Rian, sits on her lap and sucks one of her mother's few fingers on her maimed left hand.
He kissed Rian on the head when he met her. My apologies.
Devon taps my nose in farewell.
I'll leave you ladies to chat.
I sit up, clutching the blanket around me. Do you want me to come with you and find out what the prince needs? I am not dressed, but I can be in a moment. These women have just learned I am a burner. I am nervous about what they will say. Devon tosses one of the fallen bed pillows at me, and I catch it.
Stay and enjoy your friends.
His eyes twinkle, knowing I would rather go with him, but Ishana and Parisa start to natter about Ashwin's dashing chin, and Devon slips out.
The prince is even more attractive than Tarek, and...
Oh, kindred! Parisa picks up my hand and clucks her tongue.
Your nails are ghastly!
Ishana runs her fingers down my tresses. But she still has the comeliest hair. Perhaps the kindred wants to get out of bed, suggests Asha, folding her arms over her chest.
Doesn't Asha look pretty? Shyla notes of my servant. We had a lot of free time while we were trapped in the Tigris Pavilion. It took some persuading, but Asha finally removed that hideous veil and let us do her nails. Even her toenails are painted.
Asha has always been beautiful, I reply, and her color turns as red as her nails.
You could have told us you're a burner, Shyla says, altering the tone of the mood.
I grip Rian's little hand in mine to avoid meeting their gazes. I was afraid you'd hate me. Ishana throws her arms around me, followed by a more careful Parisa protecting her sore ribs. We could never hate you, Kalinda, Ishana says. Your rank tournament brought peace to the palace.
I jolt, certain I had done the opposite.
Your victory brought the courtesans and Ramis together. We're sister warriors, fighting alongside each other now instead of against one another.
You're our kindred, Parisa adds. We were so worried when you left. I never imagined they would miss me. I worried about you too. Shyla cuddles Rian closer.
Asha kept saying you'd return. None of us doubted you.
Asha holds herself removed from us. Ishana extends her arm to her, and Asha adds her hug to our collection. Seeing them treat her as an equal gives me hope that change can come to Turachin.
Kalinda, Ishana says, letting me go. I do believe you're nude.
Parisa smacks her side lightly.
As if you didn't know.
I didn't. I thought she and the general were...
Ishana flushes a flattering pink.
Oh my. Does this mean you have no claim on Prince Ashwin?
Parisa tosses a pillow at her.
I was going to ask her.
Their petty arguing draws laughs from the rest of us.
You're free to pursue the prince. In fact, I look forward to witnessing how Ashwin fares against the vivacious Parisa and flirtatious Ishana.
A streak of orange-red zips past my open balcony. I slip into my robe and go outside. Tinley and Char land in the garden. The other women rush out to view the Mahati Falcon. As they marvel over Char, I dress, strapping on my mother's daggers, as always, and rush downstairs. The garden smells of ripe lemons dangling from their trees. I duck under one and walk up to Tinley.
I thought you left Turachin.
I did. She drinks from her water flask and continues. We were returning to Paljor when the wind told me Uduk escaped. Char and I tracked him across the desert. He stopped there at dawn to tend to his injured wing. He'll rest during the day and travel at night. All a cheerfulness filters out of my good mood.
Is Uduk headed for the gate?
He must be. Tinley turns her milky eyes to the clear sky. The sun was full when I woke this morning. At first, I do not understand her meaning, but as I shade my eyes and focus on the sun, I notice a slice of it is missing. A shadow is eclipsing the sun's supernal light. The eclipse is slight, but even as I stand here, the veil falls further and my dread deepens. Demon powers are stronger in the dark. Stopping Uduk from opening the gate when the sun is fully eclipsed will be impossible. Ashwin must have seen this and sought out Devon. The two are probably strategizing a plan right now. Ashwin will want to avoid hysteria, and Devon will employ our resources to stop Uduk. The other sovereigns will see the sun disappearing and send help, but rallying our allies will take time. The darker the sky becomes, the less likely we are to stop Uduk. I eye the falcon munching on a mouse that she frightened out from behind a bush. Could Char fly fast enough to outpace Uduk to Samia?
He has a head start, so it'll be close. You'd make better time without me.
Tinley pets her falcon's side with her long, sharp nails. Char is quicker than any wind I can summon, and my added weight would slow her.
You were headed home, I say, remembering what she told me.
I thought I'd try. Tinley tosses her silver hair behind her, a nonchalant gesture undone by the ache in her voice. Truth be told, I miss it. My gaze lifts to the battle-worn palace. Holes pockmark the walls and roofs, but the structure held. The palace is my home now. So many people I love are here, and they are finally free. I have to force Uduk through the gate and vanquish him.
Everything you need is in the saddlebag.
Tinley hoists me into the woven saddle. Char turns her head and blinks at me. I grab a fistful of her neck feathers as I have observed her rider do.
Thank you, Tinley. Please tell General Naik and Prince Ashwin I said goodbye.
I'm sure that'll pacify them, she says dryly.
Tinley steps back and whistles through her teeth.
Char, take Kalinda to Samia. Show her what it is to outrun the wind.
The falcon opens her wings and launches into the sky. My stomach dives as we ascend over Vani. I steal one last glimpse of the palace, then we level off and zoom over the desert, racing the vanishing sun.
30. Devon.
I come upon Brock in the upper corridor off the main entry. He is dazzling a pair of Ronnies with a single flame dancing over his palm. I clap him on the back. I need you to come along and speak to Prince Ashwin with me. Brock extinguishes the flame and sends a parting grin at the women.
I'll show you how I put out fire later, he says.
They're all swoons and big eyes as my brother and I start down the staircase together. Those women know you're a burner, and they aren't afraid of you? I ask. Brock pushes out a raw laugh.
Odd, isn't it? I spent my whole life hiding that I'm the most dangerous type of Buddha in the world, but now that the Kindred saved the Empire with her burner powers, my rarity makes me desirable.
His buoyant voice holds an undercurrent of resentment. Brock may not need to conceal his powers any longer, but this sudden acceptance from society does not expunge the years he spent hiding in fear. Natasha and Yatin sit on the opposite curved staircase. Yatin sports a black eye, and Natasha wears a sling for her dislocated shoulder.
Devin! Brock!
Natasha waves us over, and keeps waving until we reach them. She fans out her hand to show me the lotus ring on her finger.
Yatin and I are intended to wed.
Brock envelops her in a gentle hug. His enthusiasm may be fresher than mine, but I mean it wholeheartedly when I congratulate them.
Yatin is inviting his mother and sisters to visit,
Natasha says, stroking my friend's ropey beard.
He thinks they may move here to be near us.
I envy the straightness of their path. Although Kali and I found a temporary solution for our Rani and soldier dilemma, my position in the Imperial Army is uncertain, as is how I healed from Udug's fire blast. Kali accepted my miraculous recovery as a mercy from the gods, but I suspect something else shielded me from harm. Natasha spots a courtesan up the stairway, then drags Yatin after her to show off her lotus ring to the next person. I pause with Brock outside the throne room. Brock, before we go in, I have something to tell you.
Is it how you became general? Because Yatin already told me.
No, it's about Mother. Brock rocks back on his heels, and his brow lifts in question. I hesitate to go on, but I started this conversation, and I must finish it. I met a man in Lestari. Have you heard of Ambassador Chit?
I have.
Brock brushes ash from his tunic while I mull over the best phrasing. I met your father, or your father is alive, or maybe Mother is with your father. He looks like you. Rather, you look like him, only taller. Brock barks a laugh.
Devin, just say it.
Ambassador Chit is your father, I blurt out. Brock closes off his expression, cold as burned out charcoal. Skies, I am fouling this up. Mother confirmed it. They met here in Vani. He tried to acquire her from Raja Tarek, but he refused his offers. When Brock still does not respond, I add, you have his eyes. Brock retains his straight-faced stare and shrugs.
Is that all?
Yes, I... What? He grabs my stiff shoulder and jostles me.
Relax, Devin. I know Ambassador Chit is my father. Hostin helped me piece it together a long time ago. It wasn't too difficult. Not many burners visited Vani the year I was born, and Mother couldn't leave the palace, so that narrowed down the possibilities to one man.
Sky's alive, Brock! I scrub the tightness from the corners of my mouth. You could have told me. Have you seen or spoken to Chit?
I didn't feel the need to travel all the way to Lestari to meet a stranger. You and Mother are all the family I need.
He frowns at my attempts to regain my composure.
What did you think would come of it?
I thought, now that you have Mother and Chit. Brock grabs my shoulder again softer and gives me a companionable shake.
We've been brothers our whole lives. No one can change that.
He bumps his forehead into mine and grasps my neck, pressing me against him.
You're a good brother, Devin. But you worry more than you should.
I pat his back. You haven't exactly made it easy on me. The sneaking off, the women. Brock pulls away, grinning slyly.
Speaking of women, that Princess Jemmy is quite a lady.
She likes to think she's persuasive. Brock slings his arm around my neck and hauls me toward the throne room.
She seems to be working her charms on Ashwin.
Jemmy and the boy prince? The princess has better taste than that. We stroll into the throne room. Prince Ashwin stands before the dais, hands deep in his pockets, as he stares at his father's overturned throne. The rest of the room is in disarray, tables overturned and floor cushions in heaps. Princess Jemmy waits off to the side. She sees our approach, but her attention is fixed on Ashwin. Or maybe she isn't choosy. My brother and I pause behind the prince. I leave Brock near Jemmy and go to him. Prince Ashwin, I say, bowing. He revolves while leaving his hands in his pockets. Exhaustion darkens the skin under his red-rimmed eyes.
General Naik. Oh, pardon me, Captain Naik. Or is it just Devon?
I lower my voice to extend only between us. We should discuss that. I've been contemplating how I survived Udub's attack, and all I can settle upon is that someone with power protected me. Ashwin rakes a hand through his disheveled hair, on end from him ruffling it all night.
Kali told me the details of your heart's wish. She said it protected her, which I can understand, given your, closeness. What I don't understand is, why? Why did you include me in your heart's wish?
Ashwin reaches up to muss his hair again, stops, and shoves his hand back into his pockets.
I envisioned you as my general. The Turquoise Palace is your home. While this place is a stranger to me. I felt I couldn't succeed without both you and Kali. You're unerringly faithful in your devotion to the Empire.
He rests his foot on the bottom step of the dais, adjacent to the toppled throne.
Tarashan's future would be incomplete without you.
I believe him, and not just because I cannot think of another explanation for how I healed when Udug burned me, twice. I survived Udug's powers the same way Kalinda did, through Ashwin's love for the Empire. I am humbled that I am included in his vision for the future. Me, a man who has struck him down, defied him, distrusted him, and generally disliked him. A man who Kalinda, the woman we both love, has repeatedly chosen over him. He may be an idealist, but his intent is pure.
I owe you my life. Ashwin sighs a little. Consider it thanks for your years of service.
His swiftness to forgive my mistakes shames me. I must apologize for my unruliness. Ashwin's gaze bounds to mine.
If you'll still have me, it would be my honor to serve as your general, Your Majesty.
I bow as low as I would for the Raja. When I rise, Ashwin holds himself perfectly still, except for his mouth, which ticks upward a tad.
Thank you, General. I'm afraid I know little about leading our troops. They're confused by the Bhutas among us. The commanders are keeping the men in line, but I fear a revolt. What would you?
A wind sweeps into the throne room, startling Princess Jemmy, and then Opal charges in.
Devon, Kalinda has left. She flew away on Tinley's Mahati Falcon.
Tinley? I ask, recognizing the name from the trial tournament in the Sultanate.
Chief Naresh's daughter has been helping us, Ashwin explains.
Kalinda has gone to Samia.
Opal flourishes her hand, and wind pushes the high draperies away, uncovering the upper windows.
Udug has crossed the desert. He's on his way up the mountains to open the gate to the void.
She points out the windows, and we squint up. A piece of the sun has been shaved off.
The celestial lights are dimming, Ashwin murmurs.
Pardon?
Brock asks, his head jerking back in alarm.
The dimming of the sun and stars is the definitive sign that the Evernight is entering into our world.
Ashwin rubs his forehead with his thumb.
We don't have long. The eclipse takes a day to complete. Or was it two? I don't remember.
What book did you read this in? I ask.
The text was lost in the Samia Temple fire.
Ashwin grips his chin in contemplation.
I need a full report on our troops, General.
The Imperial Army isn't fit to defeat Hudug alone. The Lestarian Navy should arrive shortly, but we need a strategy to transport as many Bootas to Samia as fast as possible. Fear leaves my voice jagged and torn.
Gods, Kali, why did you go without us?
I gesture Brock forward. This is my brother, Brock. He's a burner and a soldier. He'll serve as my second-in-command.
I'm grateful to have you, Commander,
Ashwin says, accepting my hasty appointment. Brock bows.
An honor, Your Majesty.
Opal's concentration goes out the doorway.
Devon, the Lestarian Navy has arrived.
All at once we run for the door. Breaking ahead of everyone, I sprint to the main courtyard in front of the palace. Navy vessels pack the river that weaves to the city wall. Far past the last Navy ship, another vessel plods up the river. I recognize the ship's yellow paint and curse under my breath. Sea raiders are relentless. A commanding, statuesque girl with hair like lightning saunters up to my side.
You must be General Naik. I'm Tinley, Chief Naresh's daughter.
You let Kali fly away on your falcon? I say.
Kalinda asked me to tell you she's sorry she didn't say goodbye. I told her an apology wouldn't appease you.
Her honesty robs most of my annoyance. You're right, it doesn't.
Is that the Lestarian Navy?
Tinley asks, then sniffs, unimpressed.
A little late, aren't they?
They did their best.
I'm sure, she says dryly. My father has a fleet of airships piloted by Galers, not unlike the Navy you see there. Only our fleet doesn't have to squeeze down a waterway to get where we need.
I do not respond to her blunt arrogance. Her opinion of the Navy is moot, considering the Paljorian air fleet opted not to ally with us at all. I wander nearer to the contorted gate and step over a crack, all that remains of the crevice the warlord made. Tinley keeps pace with me.
If you intend to help the kindred, I suggest you leave for Samia right away.
I pinch the bridge of my nose. Just how am I supposed to do that? My mind whirls to take everything in. Kali, gone to Samia. The Navy's arrival, the Sea Raiders. Chief Naresh's daughter. Airships. I spin toward Tinley. How many Galers does it take to fly an airship?
Depends on the weight of the cargo.
She leans her upper half away and crosses her arms over her chest.
Why?
Ashwin and Jemmy catch up, followed by Brock and Opal. Can you fly any vessel, or must it be one of your airships? I ask Tinley, continuing our conversation without pause.
With enough Galers and sails, we could fly this entire palace.
I gaze hard at the Navy ships. I know how to get to Vani, but I need more Galers, a lot of them.
There's only me, Opal says. The Navy will have a couple dozen, but that's all.
Princess Jemmy, I say. Don't the Sea Raiders have Galers? Jemmy wags a finger at me.
No, General. The Sea Raiders are profiteers. Captain Locke won't help us.
I gesture at the sun, becoming more eclipsed by the moment. We show them that, and they will. We'll offer them the same bounty they would have gotten for capturing Prince Ashwin and Kali. Commander Brock, you and the princess meet with Captain Locke. The prince and I will speak to Admiral Rimba. My gaze slides to the long line of Navy vessels, and I try to picture what they will look like airborne. I have a feeling we're both in for a difficult conversation. I head back inside and prepare my proposal for the admiral. The prince falls into step behind me.
General, he starts, I know what you have planned, but what will it cost me?
We need to prevent the sun from dying, and you're concerned about the fee? Ashwin stays with me, his strides clipped.
I'm afraid for Kali, and for us all, but I must consider every consequence and outcome.
We pass through the palace threshold, the gilded elephant door handles gleaming. I respect Ashwin's determination to place his people first, but he has missed the most vital part of his desired success. Kali is the heart of the new Tarachan. Lose her, and the future is meaningless. Irritation seeps into my voice. The only certain outcome right now is Kali's death. You'd let her fall to keep your fortune?
I am Raja now,
he answers, a sort of resigned acceptance of his mantle.
I cannot compromise for anyone.
We enter the throne room, our daylight dimming. Your Majesty, we are far past compromised. We are nearly out of time.
31. Kalinda. I dismount Char and set foot on snowy ground. The falcon immediately spreads her massive wings and launches off. She soars west, her fiery feathers blending in with the sunset. After almost an entire day of flying, the sun is more than three quarters eclipsed. By dawn tomorrow, a mere crescent will rise, if the sun rises at all. Before Char landed, I relied upon a bird's-eye view of the area to search thoroughly for Uduk within the frozen landscape. I did not see him. Tugging the bear skin closer, I hike over the hill, away from the frozen lake, past the burned forest, to the remains of the Sisterhood Temple. The smoldering heat has gone. Ash and snow blanket the debris of what was the North Tower. Part of the blackened piles of stone crumbled down the cliff to the gully below. I hold in tears. The tragic end of my home will never cease to devastate me. Darkness falls, a crisp curtain of raw winter. My banked soul fire simmers, sending heat to my extremities. I consumed all the food and water Tinley had in her saddlebag to stockpile my powers, and my inner star hums. I traverse back to the skeletal woods and hunker down in my bearskin to wait for the stars. None come out to join me. Neither is the moon much company. Its weakening paleness provides no solace from the shadows. Anchored in the dark, I wait anxiously for the night to peel back its lips and bear fangs dripping of fate. The sound of rocks sliding breaks the silence. I grip the cold handle of my mother's dagger and whisper my full name, Kalinda Zacharias. Firmly grounded to my father's ancient line of burners and my mother's sister warrior courage, I seek the scent of scorched sulfur. Claws appear at the ledge of the cliff. A whitish demon with deformed features and hideous veined wings clambers up onto the ruins. I lower myself within the charred tree stumps. Uduk extends his wings. The sharp bones stick up behind his head like a single set of antlers on a stag. He is jagged ice and splintering bones. Uduk jets into the sky and flies over the dead forest. I push through the trees, pursuing the flapping of his ugly wings. He lands near the shore of the frozen lake, its surface lit by the starving moon. I creep closer, quiet as my weight and caution can bear. Uduk snaps his head up, revolves, and peers at me.
Come to meet your master, he sneers.
We serve different gods.
Where are your gods now?
Uduk spreads his arms and wings to the lost stars and fading moonlight, which is frailer than when night fell. I leave the dead forest, dagger firmly grasped. They're watching over me.
They've abandoned you,
he counters.
Kor is the only god left here, and he has been restrained for too long.
Uduk steps backward to the lake with his clawed feet. I pace him, questioning his route. Where is he going?
He will be your almighty master. With his return, conviction in things believed but never seen will be obsolete. You will have your god here too and forever to rule over all flesh, in the flesh.
Mankind is not here to fulfill Kor's bidding.
Do you not already live per your godly purpose? How will serving Kor be any different than living up to Anu's demands? Unlike Anu, Kor will have no virtues for you to adhere to. Your purpose will be his.
Udug's